Drama.
Drama. Hey, drama listeners. We have a very exciting episode coming at you today with the one and only Nick Walker. You know him from Hamilton, and he's currently in Ain't Too Proud.
He is so freaking good. And actually, we've had three of the five current temptations.
Yes, we have had Jelani Remy.
That's right.
And Juwan Jackson.
Love.
And then today is Nick. We talk about Hamilton. We talk about Ain't Too Proud. We talk about so much. And you've got to listen to this episode. And also, check out our Patreon. It's $5 a month for bonus episodes, close friends content. You're truly a part of the pod in a special way. And as the holiday season is coming around, why don't you consider supporting us as we head into this next year with $5 a month? Why not?
Let's do it. All right, Dylan. Why are we keeping them waiting? Let's go to the show.
Okay.
Press play.
Curtain of an hour in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey. Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
Dylan, I'm like actually gagged right now, and I just got this like warm feeling because we have not recorded sitting next to each other on a regular feed pod
since March 10th, 2020.
That's insane.
I want to say it was March 10th.
And we're doing this for a very special reason.
Yeah.
Because you are visiting me in New York City.
That's right. I'm back again.
I know. And you're kind of a Twitter star randomly getting like 50 likes on a selfie.
I just posted a selfie on my Twitter account that just said, good morning, New York.
I'm gagged. Well, you know, New York missed you. Did you miss it?
I really did. Especially now that it feels like the New York that I left behind dramatically.
Oh my God. Literal drama.
Yeah.
What are we doing this week? So let's tell everyone, you know, we took a little hiatus from recording.
We did because we recorded the gargantuan 2-year anniversary, you know, 6 interviews crammed into 2 episodes, catching up with our pals. Let's see. Well, we saw our friend Robbie Rozelle show at Birdland last night.
Yes. Love.
We're seeing
love,
Carolina
love.
Change. We're seeing everything that we haven't seen before or things that we didn't see before the pandemic. I'm going to see Flying Over Sunset.
I know. I'm jealous.
Got to catch Diana.
I know, we must.
I mean, it's everyone's talking about
it. Wait, everyone is saying it's like so good live.
Yeah. I mean, we have not seen the Netflix.
I know. We held off. It's weird. And I guess we can talk about this once we've actually seen it, but it's interesting the concept of, you know, Hamilton came out on Disney Plus and it increased ticket sales.
It was just in the press that Lin said it increased demand.
Yeah, increased demand. And then Diana took a risk, a musical no one had seen before, going on Netflix. And no, I guess no audience. I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. And people were like ripping it apart online. But now people are seeing it in real life. And it's interesting to kind of, I'm not comparing the art of the two, but just in the way both of them dropped on streaming services. And that Diana is, I guess, playing amazingly in front of a crowd.
And I heard that the audience is like participating.
They love it.
Singing along, heckling Prince Charles. So
I know. I'm excited to see it for that reason.
Maybe we're in a new age of theater.
I think we are.
Yeah, definitely. And then I don't know if we're seeing anything else. We're going to catch our friend Ben Moss's show.
Oh yeah, it's going to be so fun.
And maybe a couple other things. But there is a show we're not catching this time because we saw it early on. But
yes.
I have a feeling after our conversation today, I'm going to feel that inkling to want to return to it. And that's Ain't Too Proud because we're talking to the star of it today.
The literal star.
Literal star of that, among other things. And I think I'm going to read him in because we want to be precious with his time.
Yes.
As he's, you know, with us the morning after his birthday.
I know, which is kind of a gag.
I know.
New year, new me.
Very, yeah.
New year, new Nikki.
Oh, that could be the title of the episode. All right, let's do it. Our guest today is currently starring as Otis Williams in Ain't Too Proud, The Life, Yes, and Times of the Temptations. Hot off of 3 years on Broadway and touring the nation as Aaron Burr, Sir, in Hamilton. This leading man has shared his talents in the New York and national touring companies of Motown the Musical, as well as Off-Broadway in Peter and the Starcatcher. You just might recognize him from Law & Order SVU, or perhaps know his name as a playwright. He is the creator and writer of the Bloody Boston trilogy, as well as co-creator of Company One's Articulation. His movie analysis podcast, Little Justice, is available for downloading now, along with episodes of his activism chat show with Sasha Hutchings on Broadway World called Chaos Twins. Twins.
Wait, we're the Chaos Twins.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
He is a Marvel fanatic, theme park extraordinaire, and bona fide Broadway star. Please welcome to Drama,
Nick Walker.
I'm going to say, let me tell you, I have never had such a well-researched and kind introduction. That is so, I feel so special. Thank you for having me on this wonderful, wonderful pod. Oh my goodness.
Well, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. It is an honor.
Oh my gosh. Well, when I saw that you were replying to emails on your birthday, which I then saw on social media later, I thought, wow, among all of the bevy of messages he's probably receiving of old friends and teachers and fans alike, he's replying to us in our little podcast.
Listen, this is very important. This is very important. Y'all are keeping the love of this thing alive, man. So we gotta, we're, you know, you call, I answer. That's the bottom line. That's what it is.
Oh, Nick, welcome to Drama.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on Drama. I'm very excited to be here.
Are you well?
I'm super well. You know, it's a crazy, as you guys know, it's a crazy time. And I think that, you know, there's the drama of the shows we do and the stories we tell, but it's also the drama of like, hey, we're literally trying to like jumpstart an industry in the midst of a pandemic. And what is that? How does that go? What does that look like? And it's the kind of thing where it really, you have to take it one day at a time, because you just, especially when you're leading a show, it is pretty overwhelming. Like it really is this kind of like thing that's like staring you right in the face, and you just are trying to enjoy the fact that you're back doing this job you love, but you're also like, wow, this is so different. This is so, but like, it's also so the same. Like, you know, there's things I think within the community of your building of your show, it's like, at least for us, it feels that community, you know, I think we're very fortunate that Ain't Too Proud is just a building full of just good people, people who are really there for the work and really there to support each other. And that we don't have a lot of like, you know, tension or butting heads or anything like that. So that's nice. But then you just, you know, you look at the world and you look at what we kind of are facing down, and it's just like, good Lord. And we got to do a, you know, 3-hour show in the middle of all that, you know? So it's a lot, man. But we're making it, you know, day by day.
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, thank you for making time for us. We're such fans. I know we were chatting before, but we definitely got to see you as Aaron Burr on the tour of Hamilton in Cleveland.
So
what was that like, summer 20? Was that 2017?
I think summer it was 20, it was either 20, I think it might be 2018.
18 makes sense, actually. Yeah.
18, I think, yeah. And I think it's 2018. Yeah. That, Cleveland, that's, I was telling you guys before we start recording that stop is so special to me because number one, now the Cleveland Guardians,
that's right.
You know, my buddy Adam Grossman works for the Red Sox, and I'm from Boston. And so he was hooking us up with all these sports things, and it was really great just to be able to, like, you know, see all these teams up close and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then y'all's grocery store. And here's the funny thing. I did a video there and it went like legit viral. Cause like I had like a reaction video. I just recorded a video like, yo, y'all, you know, when we're coming to your tour, like I understand like you don't want to, you know, tell us about like the gems of your town. You want to protect those secrets, but like y'all have to prepare me for like this grocery store because this is out of control. And if you don't know Heinen's in Cleveland, like it is. Was it in a bank? Like, what was that building?
Yes. Yes.
It was a bank. Mm-hmm. And it is like this stunning dome and like these beautiful pillars. I'm an architecture nerd. I love this stuff. Uh-huh. And it's also the shooting location for the Avengers, one of the Captain America fights against the Chitauri. And it literally, I was just like, this is stunning. And then that video just went to the point where like people from Cleveland still DM me and they're like, they like send me gift cards.
We got to come back.
I'm definitely trying to come back to Cleveland. I love that city. That was so fun.
That's so nice to hear, you know, because people often call Cleveland the mistake on the lake.
I know.
It's like it gets a bad reputation, but you heard it here first, folks.
I love Cleveland.
Nick Walker loved Cleveland.
Love Cleveland.
I think before the Avengers filmed there, it was starting to gain notoriety as a filming location. I think Spider-Man 3 filmed some scenes there as well.
I would believe that. It's perfect for it. It's like there's something, and that's what I loved too, was like there's just something. I'm a huge sucker for any city that's going to take, yes, you can knock down these buildings and you can create something completely new, high rises, whatever, but like there's a couple of locations that you guys have on that main strip where You've taken, you've maintained the old structure. There's like this beautiful seafood restaurant or sushi restaurant that's also in a bank. That's in another bank. And there's like that bar that's like in like underground or something. That's actually our Hamilton director, Tommy, threw us a party down there. That like bank vault lounge thing. So it was just like,
oh, is it called? Cool. I think it's literally called the vault.
I think it is called the vault. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it's called. And it was just really cool to kind of hang in these like old, I love history. I just love being like at these old buildings, you know, and it's really cool.
That is so fun. Oh my God. Actually, I just remembered while you were talking that I was working at an indoor cycling studio at the time. And a lot of you guys from Hamilton would come ride, especially Joseph Morales.
Oh,
he would come all the time. And Nick, let me tell you, the girls that I worked with would freak out being like, oh my God, Hamilton was in our class. Mm-hmm. It was like it was the moment of the summer, honestly, because you guys were there for like, what,
about a month,
five or six weeks?
Yeah. We were there for like 5 weeks. And it was great. I think, you know, Playhouse Square, like that whole area, right? It really is, you know, it's so rare when you come in on tours, even with Hamilton, right? When Hamilton and you're doing like 2 months sit downs, month and a half sit down, you know, you generally just come in and, you know, just are, you know, you come into the venue and you kind of set up shop and you have, you know, your stage manager, your company manager give you the rundown. But I'll never forget that Cleveland, that when we came in, we had a meeting with like their people, like they were there for our first day, like, hey, if there's anything we can do for you, like they just wanted to introduce themselves. And I thought it was the sweetest thing. And it was just so clear that that community just cares about theater and really wanted to make us feel safe and welcomed. And it was just like, oh, you know what, this is gonna be fun. You know, and it was a blast. And Joseph's an idiot, and you can tell him I said that. I mean, and I say idiot, one thing you'll learn about me is everybody who I'm dear friends with, I have like a very antagonistic relationship with on the surface.
And just, yes, you're famous for having frenemies, from what I've heard.
I have a lot of frenemies, a lot. And Joseph is one of them. We have our little pet names for each other that is very offensive. But
he's drama,
100% drama. But he is literally, I couldn't have done the show without him. He got, because there's, you know, when you're playing Burr and Hamilton, like there's just not a lot of other characters who kind of, I would imagine it's similar to like an Elphaba Glinda thing, where there's just not a lot of characters who kind of understand what you have to do your show. And not like, I hate when we get into like the whole actory thing of like, oh, I have to plumb the depths and like all that stuff. But like, like even just the day-to-day maintenance of like, ooh, yeah, probably can't go out. Like, probably got to stay in tonight. Probably got it, whatever, you know, just kind of keep to myself. Like, very rare that you have the other tracks that can really understand that, just because like, there's not a lot of, not as much narrative weight on them. But with me and Joseph from the beginning, like even back in rehearsals, we were going out like after rehearsal, like, hey, you good? Like, you need anything? Cause that's a lot. And we're like, okay, we got this. So I love that boy to my dying day. Yeah.
I love that. And listen, you were so good as Burr and so tall, and you had the beard. It was just very striking. Were you the first Burr on the tour?
Yeah.
We opened the tour. Oh my God. You did such a great job. Yes. Nick.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, go ahead. What
did
you say?
Oh, I was just going to say, did you like playing Burr?
Loved it. It was, you know, it's so funny, you know, so I think the thing that I really, you know, appreciate about the way that Lynn and Tommy and Jeffrey, our Hamilton producer, set me up was that they really didn't want me to do Leslie, and they don't want anyone doing Leslie. Like I think that's true, it's true across the board. They don't want anyone doing Renee. Nobody should do C-Jack because C-Jack sucks. He's a terrible person. He has no talent. I hope he listens to this.
Frenemy.
He's an absolute one. Oh, I'll tell you a story about it. He messed me up so bad literally a couple days ago on the street and scared the crap out of me. I'm going to tell you that story in 2 seconds because he is absolutely a frenemy. But no, the thing I really appreciate is that they really want you to find it for yourself. And, you know, I think it's funny because when the tour was in Cleveland, I think I was very much still finding my groove. I think honestly, Burr, even with the Broadway stint and, you know, and then the tour, I was on tour, you know, for 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I think that it really took me until that last 6 months to really find the burr that was like in, if we're talking like the target, right? Like the concentric circles of a target, like that was in the center ring, right? That was kind of the sticking point that was like right there, was in the last 6 months of tour. Before that, it wasn't that I didn't get it. It was just, there was a consistency that wasn't there yet. And, you know, and I had to really work with the team to find, just because it is, there are so many possibilities for what you can do with that role. And I will also say, I think the kind of the beautiful thing about that role was it really taught me, it was kind of like a free masterclass on how to lead a company. Because up until that point, right, I'd been understudying all for my Broadway career. So this is my first time like, no, this is, you are out front of the thing and it's your role now. And I think when you're an understudy, and understudies are the unsung heroes of this thing, swings, understudies, standbys, like they literally are the A-team. They are just ready to go. But I think you have a little more freedom because you're not on there every night. So you can really play around because it is sporadic. But when you're doing the thing, how can you create it doesn't have to be the same show every night, but can you create a consistent baseline so that, you know, everyone who's interacting with you, you know, you can play so that like you keep it fresh, but like just what is that center ring? And that took me about a year and a half to find.
Wow.
So, yeah. But we found it. We found it. So
we found it. Yeah. I mean, I thought you were so great. Wait, you know who else I was obsessed with?
Who?
And I don't remember her name, but the gal playing Angelica.
Oh, Taria Campbell.
Taria Campbell. Right,
she is out of this world.
Her Satisfied is one of the most incredible Satisfied. I think one of the things that they have done so smartly is, again, they're not trying to cast carbon copies. There are energies that they are trying to replicate. And Taria is an old soul. And I mean that in the most respectful way. She is someone who has seen life, experienced life, and brings that with her on stage. And I think there is a grounding to her Satisfied. There is a knowledge of, for me, thinking back to it, you understand the tactician that Angelica is, right? A lot of it's not just this fun Missy Elliott rap. It is literally a woman being like, hey, I only have options A, B, C in this time period. And here's how I want to navigate this. You see the cost. You really see the cost by the end of it of like, yeah, I got to let go of the thing that makes me happy because there are bigger fish to fry. I think with Taria, I for the first time understood her or Angelica as kind of the antithesis to Hamilton in the sense of like the most selfless, right? Mm. Hamilton's journey is learning selflessness. Angelica is selfless from the time she walks on the stage. She is thinking about others. And that is such it comes so across so clearly with Taria, you know.
I'm gagged.
Wow.
Oh no,
I clearly had some time to think about the show in all those years.
Well, it's crazy. You know, I love, so that's in my writing life. I love story structure. I love, you know, that's why when I first joined this, I had a very burr relationship with this show because it is so brilliant. And I was literally like, screw you guys. I don't like, screw you for creating this thing that is so brilliant. And then you meet Lynn and you're like, wow, you're just a big nerd. like it's not like you are just somebody who gets this stuff. And of course it's you. And it really is coming from a place of such a love, but it can't deny that like you built something that is so structurally sound. And I think that, you know, you asked me my moment with that inspired me.
Yeah. Yeah. Your Ring of Keys moment.
My Ring of Keys moment. And I think that I think this is later in my career, but it re-inspired me was really learning how deep the rabbit hole goes in terms of the structure of the show, because, and you know, I say this in the wake of losing, you know, our great artist Sondheim,
right?
I think that we live in this time right now where, you know, again, I get it, you know, Times Square, you know, you're trying to get people in, you want money. You know, it doesn't mean that you can't have, like, I'm not against bread and circuses. I'm not against these shows that are like, no, it's not, you know, I want to do away with the word fluff because nothing is fluff. It's all, if you got a show on Broadway, you worked really, really hard.
Yeah, right. You for a long just, time, probably
long time. You really busted some hump to get your show there, because like it's hard, y'all. Like no show is just there because it wanted to be there. Like it was just like overnight. But I think that there's something to be said for shows that, like, even if they are, you know, jukebox musicals, even if they are whatever, just really understand structure and what it means to tell a story and what it means to write variations on a theme. And Hamilton is that show. Hamilton is variations on a theme. Every character is a commentary on the central theme.
Ooh.
That's why it resonates, because you're able to just, it is staggeringly simple, and in its simplicity seems complex.
Mm.
So I was really, you know, when it first came out, I was so jealous of all my friends who were in it. I refused to listen to it.
Oh my God.
It. Oh my God. Oh, I hate it. I have journal entries from 2015 being like, yo, screw Oak. I hate that dude. I hate F. Like, what is this? Why am I coming back? I was in Denver doing the play, the premiere of One Night in Miami. I was Sam Cooke, and it was at Denver Center. And come back, and me and Oak had sushi like before I left, and he was like, yeah man, I'm doing this show with the public, we don't know what's gonna go, like whatever. I was like, dude, you know, it's the game, like whatever, it's fine. And I come back and this man's on billboards, and like, what the actual hell is happening? So I was so angry. And then you join it and you're like, wow, this is actually just a brilliant piece of writing. And there's that, I can't take that away. There's enough, like, it is just brilliant. So
it's so good. I know. And I think when Hamilton got so popular so fast, it was everywhere. Even part of me was like, oh my God, like, I don't need to see it everywhere. And then you listen to it, or you go see it again, or you talk to people about it, and you're like, oh my God, it's fucking incredible. One of the most revolutionary pieces of art we'll have in our lifetimes, and it'll hold up probably forever. You know, it's just so good. So I understand what you mean by that, having that kind of that feeling. And I appreciate your honesty about it, because sometimes we talk to people and they're just like, you know, I'm blessed, I'm doing my thing, it wasn't meant to be, whatever. No. But I'm sure they have these feelings too, you know? I mean, you do know.
Oh, everyone, that's the thing. You know, and I think that this is something that I aspire to do, you know, on my social media and just in my interactions. Like, I'm always just touched by honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's why I say it's not about fluff, because, like, you know, you talk about Diana, right? Diana is very purposefully, it seems, trying to, like, taking this kind of not camp approach, but like a very pop approach to her life. So, like, great, do that honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Just be, what is the honesty of that genre, of that thing? That's what touches me. It doesn't need to be like super serious and dark, but like, just what is the honesty there? And I also think that in my life, like, can I just be honest about, you know, my struggles and my dislikes, and you know, if you're looking to me as someone to take a cue from, can I just be honest? And I think that's what has kept me sane, is just being like, I'm not going to pretend. It also means that I can put up boundaries. If there's something I don't want to talk about, say, hey, you know, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Right. You know, like instead of making up something to like justify why I don't want to talk about it, it's like, no, it's a boundary. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I love that. Well, Nick, I have to say, I was reading through your Twitter, and I really appreciate you're so you. You're not afraid to talk about anything. And we actually spoke with Erica Henningsen most notably Mean Girls about this. And I talked to her about how I appreciate her using her platform to talk about the things that are important to her, good and bad. And that as a person with followers, you know, like it or not, with influence, she's using her voice to talk about important things, and you do the same thing. And I think it means a lot, being the star of, you know, two different hit shows now.
Mm.
It's amazing. Yeah. So thank you, seriously, for putting that out there, because it inspires other people to also use their voice.
It's very kind of you. I will say I'm fortunate to live with a beautiful and smart and very active wife who is so... I thought that I was inclusive before I came into this, you know, now 10-year relationship.
Oh my goodness.
It's been a minute.
Congrats. Married or together?
Together. So together 10 and then married for 5.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah. So no, it's been a while, but she is fiercely just about making space and the importance of everyone knowing that they have a seat and that they have a say. And it's I think especially right now, it's just beyond. We it has to be all hands on deck. It has to be. And I think that what people get so annoyed with often is like, you know, the attacks on, you know, well, that's, you know, why do we have to be so politically correct? And it's like, it's not about political correctness as much as it's about get my name right.
Yeah.
Like my favorite example, we had this amazing gentleman, David J. Johns, on the Chaos Twins, yes. Which is me and Sasha's, you know, show, activism show. And he said this thing that I think is so brilliant, because we were talking about, you know, LGBTQIA plus acronym.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, yeah. You know, when people are talking to him, like, why is there so many letters? He's like, I know it's long. You need to say every letter.
Mm-hmm.
Say every letter, because that's what it is.
Mm.
And when it gets longer, you'll say those letters as well.
Yep. Yes.
And it's just, do you know what I mean? Like, if that's your name, if that's who you are, then say the name. And I think that that's where say their names comes from. Acknowledge across all, you know, marginalized communities that there are people who are not being seen, and see them. Doesn't mean you have to agree with them. It just means do them the human decency of seeing that they exist.
Yeah.
And not taking that for granted. And I think that when you do have a platform like this, like, you know, I know that I'll never be that person who posts like the glamorous, like, I don't even know how to do, like, I was out with dinner with Juwan Jackson last night. We were making fun of him. Because he is so good. Like, you know, you need like somebody in a velvet sweater that is, he is there for you and with you. And that is beautiful. And I'll never be that person. just because I have no sense of style. I dress like a 12-year-old child from the 90s. That is one way to interact with your fans. And it's a beautiful way. And like, please spread that love and that joy and that fashion and awesome, that culture. But like, for me, I'm like, hey, if you're following me, you're going to get some nerd stuff. You're going to get some writing stuff, and you're probably going to get a lot of activism and things to call, you know, numbers to call, places to be.
So that's just, you got an authentic social media presence.
Oh, thank you.
I love it. But I've got to hear your take on Rogers, the musical. Did you watch Hawkeye yet?
Oh my God. I have not watched.
Oh,
yet.
Okay.
I'm so excited.
You'll see some familiar faces.
Oh, I know. I'm already like, because I was DMing a couple people when they were filming that.
Okay.
Oh, you guys, I am when it's perfect. It's just just conceptually, I'm like, yo, that's right. That's exactly what would happen.
Oh,
100%.
Yeah.
And it would look like that.
You're going to laugh. There's some hilarious moments in it too.
Ooh, wait, before I forget, speaking of all this musical stuff, let me tell you this Chris Jackson story really quick.
I can't believe you remembered.
Oh yeah. So Chris Jackson, I'm walking, and this is a common occurrence. I'm walking up 8th with some buddies of mine from the Diz podcast, which is you know, they cover Disney theme parks and news and all that stuff. And it's an amazing podcast. And we're just walking and talking about, like, they'd just seen the show. And all of a sudden, this freaking SUV pulls up right outside of what is now Dolly Varden's on 51st. He's like, get out the street. What the hell's your problem? And just like starts. And I'm like, are we being attacked? No, it's Chris motherfucking Jackson in the middle. And like, this man like screeches his car to a halt, gets out of the car, and like attacks me on the street. And I want everyone to know this, because everyone thinks, oh no, it's Chris. He's like, great. Chris is not great. Chris is a terrible person. Chris is bad. As is James Iglehart. Also bad. Bad people with no love in their hearts. So do not support them. Do not go to their shows. Just know that they're bad. That's all I got
to
say.
You heard it here first.
This is the drama people listen to the pod for, Nick. You need to understand. Thank you for bringing this truth about these awful men.
Always.
No wonder neither of them have responded to our emails for asking to get them to be on the podcast.
That's right.
I'm just kidding.
Drag them. Please. Please,
don't respond to nothing. A network show, or, you know, James is not a Tony and doing two different shows
cares.
At once.
Nobody cares about their... They have so much... They sit around and just look at pictures of themselves. That's what they do. All right? They got time. They're just being idiots. So...
Oh, my God. Wait, Nick, you mentioned earlier that you had sort of a second Ring of Keys moment with Hamilton. Do you have a first one when you realized that you loved the arts and wanted to be a star?
Yes, 100%. So I went as a kid. So I had or I still have ADHD. And my mom, you know, I actually got in the theater because my mom had heard the theater would focus me. And so she encouraged me to like try this out. And so, it really became part of my life. And from there was a love developed of storytelling in general.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to sound so crazy, but I was obsessed as a kid with Mark Twain. I was obsessed. Mm. I thought Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer, Connecticut Yankee, and King Arthur's Court. I loved those books. I just thought they were magnificent, to the point when the tour, when Hamilton came through Kansas City, I actually, I can say this now because, you know, it's been 2 years. I played hooky. And me and Kyle Scatliff and Fergie, who are now the Loft Jeff and Mulligan Madison on Broadway, we took a day trip to Hannibal, Missouri, where Mark Twain is from. Mm-hmm. And Hannibal is like preserved as his hometown. Like, and he based St. Petersburg, which is the hometown of Tom Sawyer, off his hometown, like street for street. So like you can go, his house was Tom's house, right? His like friend's shack was supposed to be Huck's house. And like, you can see all these places, the caves, and it's just beautiful. But point being, the Ring of Keys moment, the time when I was like, yo, I want to tell stories, was the 1994 film Tom and Huck, starring Brad Renfro and Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Oh yes, JTT.
JTT, gotta love him. It was something about that film was just so exciting to me. And I was just like, wow, you can really do things with story, like, and character. And I just remember watching it as a kid and just being like, this is incredible. Like, I don't know what it is. And to the point where, like, whenever I would go to the Disney parks, right, they have Tom Sawyer's Island and they have mm-hmm. those caves.
Oh, yeah.
And I would just, my family would have to look for me because I'd just be staying in those caves the whole day.
Oh, I love it. Them.
So that was
that's so cute.
Yeah, probably that was definitely the first inspiration of, ooh, I want to do this, was watching Tom and Huck as a child. Yeah.
Was that a Disney movie?
Yes.
Okay, yes, I thought so.
Oh, yes, it was.
Okay, that all ties in. I have not seen that movie since we were little kids. I mean, I remember watching it like at our grandma's house when we were young. But who was Jonathan Taylor Thomas in that movie?
He was Tom. It was Jonathan Taylor. Okay. He was Tom. Brad Renfro was Huck. Rachel Lee Cook, who's my first crush, was Becky Thatcher.
Yes. Gosh, Rachel Lee Cook. Rachel oh, my Lee God. Cook.
Yeah, man. It was that cast was actually stacked when I think back. Like, there was a lot of amazing character actors in there. Like, it was a good cast. I'm sure the movie is trash. Like, if I go back and watch it now, it's probably terrible. But like at that moment, it was everything. It was everything.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Some things are better in memory, I suppose.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm afraid to revisit some of my childhood favorites just for fear that they won't hold up or be as good as I remember it.
Oh, yeah. Because like, you know, you want to protect that nostalgia and that moment, you right. know. But there's some things that absolutely hold up when you go back. We've been doing we have a West Wing book club, and we've been doing a rewatch of The West Wing, and it is still just as amazing as the first time. Like, I remember my history teacher in eighth grade had us do like a West Wing book club, and he would like, we'd come in early and we'd eat Oreos and like watch The West Wing and like talk about, oh, it was a way to learn like government, you know?
Right. Wow.
Oh yeah, dude, it was awesome. But now like we're sitting around watching this thing. And it's me, Lynn, and Sasha Hutchings just watch episodes of The West Wing and just talk about them. And it's just amazing. Cause it's like, nope, this is exactly as good as I remember it. It's still amazing. So yeah, man.
Yeah. That show was very much like, in my eye, the blueprint of like the modern political drama. Like, you wouldn't have House of Cards without it. You wouldn't necessarily have Scandal without it. Like, there was, because it made politics such a, to it in layman's terms, I think, but also without shying away from, this is maybe something that would happen. And I believe people would often say it was pretty accurate to what might happen. Like, you know, they weren't necessarily pulling a smash on us.
I just watched a documentary about how it actually, not only was it accurate, but it really defined from then on what people started to look in for a president to a fault. Hmm. Because the thing about Bartlett, right? Bartlett was just a good person.
Right.
Like, and so you're all of a sudden, there was a shift that people started to notice with the West Wing, where people would really be, you know, it wasn't necessarily about the politics. It was about, mm-hmm. do I like this person? Which is kind of problematic. You know what I mean? like, no, it should probably be about like the policies they're going to enact or not uh-huh. enact when they're in office. But, you know, because Martin Sheen is just so charming, we all just were mm-hmm. like, oh, who's the charming one? Who looks presidential? Yeah. And it's like, well, that's not the best way to go, but okay. So it helps with that.
Allison Janney is in that and legend.
Let me tell you something, right? She is actually like, I really reappreciate, because I never saw 9 to 5.
Okay.
Right. But I remembered loving her. And when I've gone back and watched this episode, I'm like, you are actually out of control. Like the level of like talent that is in your pinky. Like it's just insane. Yeah. I love her work. I love her work. She's brilliant.
She's so good. We were randomly obsessed with 9 to 5 when we were younger, but
oh my God.
It was like Megan Hilty, Stephanie J. Blood, as young closeted gay boys, it was like everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm
camp. Yeah.
It was campy. Camp, I know. Wait, do you have like a favorite musical, Nick?
You know, it's so funny. I would have to say Sweeney Todd. And I just did it. I did it. It was kind of my gateway back into theater before Ain't Too Proud, up at the Hangar in Ithaca. And I had the most amazing Mrs. Lovett. And she was like Donna Lynn Champlin.
Oh, she's phenomenal.
She was out. And she was, when I tell you, like, it was like watching somebody step into like the perfect fit shoe. Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah, this is, you could do this all day and you will. It just reminded me of like the first musical that ever got me was actually Assassins. I had a love for Damn Yankees. Like I thought that Damn Yankees was really cool and fun. But then I remember in high school listening to Assassins. My theater teachers in high school actually ran Company One, where I'd later write that show Articulation. Mm-hmm. They introduced me to Assassins. They were like, yeah, you know, this is a, because they didn't do a lot of musicals, but they were like, this is a musical that if we were to do a musical, this would be the one. Because they're very, this wonderful group in Boston, and they really have like for the past 25 years, like really just do all sorts of boundary pushing theater. Really, like they just, anything that comes to the public, they like grab it right after and like try to do the Boston.
Oh, that's theater. Awesome.
But yeah, Assassins, I was just like, this is incredible. This is like, it's just so weird, it's just so strange and uncomfortable. And again, it was one of those moments where, you know, I think this, and this goes back to the honesty conversation, I didn't know that musicals, I knew that musicals could be fun, I knew that musicals could be thrilling, and like obviously you listen to these amazing performers doing these amazing things with their voices on these cast recordings, you know, in like the Wickeds of the world and the the other ones I kind of like dabbled in, like the Wedding Singers and like all these.
Oh, love Wedding Singers.
Dylan loves the Wedding
Singers.
Oh my God.
Singer. Oh my, no. Well, so Richard Blake, that's another one person that I hate with all my guts. I hate his guts, and he's a terrible person.
All About the Green.
All About the Green. Yeah, that is a perfect song for him. But
I love him.
Oh no, he's a sweet, sweet dude. Like, yeah, that was like cool. But then I started listening to this, and I was like, wow, you can really build character with these with these songs. And that's all Assassins is like really getting it. Every song just tries to put you inside their head, so you just understand a little bit more, and it's just brilliant. And so from there, Sweeney Todd.
Sensing a Sondheim theme.
Oh, yeah. So to me, I am a huge fan. I, you know, because I wouldn't necessarily call myself a musical fan. I would call myself a Sondheim fan. I just think, I think what's, you know, and I know that sounds so snobby and pretentious, but like.
You didn't say it in that way.
You didn't say it that way.
No, but you know what it is? You know what it is? I think part and parcel to my ADHD brain, I think that for me, I need something that's going to challenge my mind. Mm-hmm. I can't. It's very hard for me to like sit and like be entertained. I have to be engaged. Mm-hmm. I have to like be like, ooh, how did you do that? Even if it's like I was watching the Suicide Squad last night, and even that was like, oh,
which
my
one?
God. Oh, the new one.
Okay.
Which is brilliant. And
it's so good.
Oh my God. Yeah. And Margot Robbie is a gift to this.
Oh movie. Yeah.
Yeah. She's great.
Oh, she's great. But yeah, I need to be engaged. I need to feel like I'm seeing things unfold. I need to see that you worked like in intricately on what this thing is. And Sondheim never fails with that. You always are watching a mind work when you're watching a Sondheim or listening to a Sondheim show. So I'm obsessed with Sondheim. I love him. I love his work.
Love. Yeah, I know. My God, I can't believe he's gone.
Yeah, very sad.
Yeah.
Nick, before we wrap up here, I just want to tell you, I was at the invited dress for Ain't Too Proud. And I got my entire life. It was so good. Aww. You were amazing. And at the end, when you gave that as Otis, you give that monologue, the emotion in your voice broke my heart. I have to tell you, because I saw Ain't Too Proud, you know, a couple years ago,
but
now seeing things again after, I mean, at this point in the pandemic, now that Broadway's back, I should say,
yeah,
everything is just affecting me differently. And I absolutely loved it. You guys were so good. And of course, we've had Juwan on the pod and Jelani. And like, I guess we have to get the other guys too.
Yeah, I know.
You will. Oh yeah. James will be like, again, fit like a shoe. He will be in here. You guys will love him if you haven't met him already. Manuel is the best. Matt is, he is such sweetheart. He's such a good person, but it's so
that
funny.
Voice.
But, the voice is out of control.
Out of control.
And that was what I think was so amazing, was again another case of like, you're never going to find another Ephraim. Ephraim Sykes is Ephraim Sykes is Ephraim Sykes. I think the mandate that he gave to Sergio and Dez, that I think was like, was just don't look for me. Like, what is another just powerhouse who can do their own thing? And Matt with that voice is like, yo, okay.
Yep, so I knew this was going to happen. Now I need to go and see it again.
I know. He gave me the goosebumps. It was crazy.
I don't understand. I actually don't understand how he does that 8 shows a week or 7 shows a week and soon to be 8.
No, they're adding one more.
They're adding, you know, because I think just for COVID safety, we had pulled back, right? We were like, okay, let's only do 7. And then now they're like, okay, yeah, I think we can do 8, and it's going to be interesting to do 8. Exactly. I'm all about 7. I'm like, please.
7 sounds good. Yeah. Do they pay you more for 8? Are you allowed to talk about this? They do. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I'll always talk about this. Yeah. They're definitely going to, that my bump will go up, which is nice. But especially for this track, for my track, which like literally, if you haven't seen the show, listeners, it's basically a 3-hour monologue.
For real.
Never leave the stage. But I will say the other thing, you know, about that ending, I think. So, you know, one of the wonderful things about this is, you know, and this is kind of the beauty, the thing that I appreciate the most about leading shows is when you are in the position of leading shows, that is never just about your talent. That is about years and years of process. And if you want to talk about like years and years, Dez, who directs this show, was my college best friend's godfather. Back my freshman year of college. This man, I had no idea who he was. I didn't know what Jersey Boys was. Did not know about the Jesus Christ Superstar Revival, but I knew that this man was taking us out to dinners at Spice and dropping like $500. And I was like, who are you? Why do you have this kind of coin? And then he was like, you're an actor. We got to stay in touch. And then years later, like literally my first big show was at La Jolla, Yoshimi Battles of Pink Robots. And he's the reason he changed my career. Like he was the first person to give me a shot at a lead role, and here I am like 10 years later leading his show. But what's amazing about that is that we have a shorthand, right? I know what his aesthetic is and what works for his kind of shows, and Dominique has written this beautiful script. But I think that the thing, especially you talk about the past 2 years, what occurred to me coming back was like, wow, this is, yes, like we can look at the jukebox musical of this and like just it's the Life and Times of the Temptations, or you can play it as someone who like found a calling in themselves to try to do something with music and bullheadedly pushed forward at the cost of losing his 4 best friends. And what, by the time you get to the end, what does that do to you? And it's not necessarily about crying. It's just about like, where are you and what do you want? You want your brothers back. That's what you want. It's the music is amazing, but you lost these people, the 4 people who probably understood you the best. They're gone. They're never coming back.
Oh my God. I'm crying in the club. I'm crying in the club at 10:30 a.m.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think, and that's what I try to bring is just a little bit of that honesty of what that moment is. And, you know, and I'm also very fortunate because Derek Baskin, you know, taught me how to survive that show. I have to, you know, it really, to get to that moment, you have to like my water regimen is real. Like I have to have about, I think it's 60 ounces before I get to the theater and then 20 ounces at intermission is like the water, like you have to, otherwise you will not make it through that show.
Oh my God, do you get like a pee break at some point? Nope. You're on stage the whole time.
No, I do not get a pee break.
Oh my God.
I do not. It's actually, and that's been, you want to talk about like coming out of this pandemic, that's been my greatest like pat on the back, like you did it, is just like we just had like a 5-show weekend and knowing that like, oh yeah, I did all 5, and like not, and it's not because I'm some hot shit, it's just like, oh, I can do this. I actually, I can. And it requires some sacrifice, right? You're not going out, but it's possible. And so that's been a nice thing of like, okay, it's still there. Mm-hmm. So I love that show, and I love those boys. I cannot dance, and so they mask my dancing very well. Because all of them are so talented at movement. So I just kind of stand in the back and like pretend and just make believe that I can dance like them. But it that show has really warms my heart every day.
Well, you're a star, so
I need to go back.
Well done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, Nick, it has been so fun talking to you. We have one this more thing to do before we say goodbye. I know, I'm like, I have so many Marvel things to talk to you about, but I guess it's a perfect segue into our closing segment, Dose or Drama, where we like to share the drama on our minds and our hearts, on our screens, in front of us. Oh. And I'm feeling dramatic about something because, you know, The Eternals came out last month and I absolutely loved it. But, you know, for some reason, it's not playing well with critics. You know, it's a risk. And I think at whatever 25 plus movies, and I think Marvel can take risks now. And the amount of representation on that screen was beyond. I was like, finally, I mean, I love everything Marvel does basically, but I was like, finally, I see parts of myself in more than just projecting.
Yes.
I thought it was so freaking good. And the way it was filmed was gorgeous. Yes. And Angelina Jolie has her foot on my neck.
Of course she does.
she didn't have to go that hard, y'all.
I wanted more for her character to do.
Oh, and I'm sure they have a whole plan. You don't get Angelina Jolie and not give her. You mean like, come on.
Wait, do you think we're going to get a Disney Plus show with her
and Gilgamesh?
Do you think that Thena and Gilgamesh will get like what they did in between? Wouldn't that be so good? Because I loved him.
It would be amazing. And I hope that they really do. I think with Disney Plus, they have such an amazing opportunity that they're already taking advantage of just world building, right? Of like, you get more time with these characters. You got to pay Angelina Jolie.
Oh, yes. Right?
Like she's going to need her coin for that. Yeah. But, you know, it might as well be like filming another movie. Yeah. Like, just, you know, just do that. But I think that, you know, to your point and tying the Marvel and the drama in together, I will say that I felt the same way about Shang-Chi. It was just so beautiful to see people who, like, again, have not been able to see themselves in these movies have a movie, have a story. My favorite stories, and this is, you know, when I was back in the Hamilton days, we used to do this thing where every Marvel movie that came out, I rented out a theater.
Oh, fun.
And we would see it as a cast. It was like my because I was like, again, I can't hang with y'all, but like, when a Marvel movie comes out, I'll be there.
Right.
And I remember we saw Black Panther as a cast, and that's a cast of all brown and black kids seeing Black Panther. And we all dressed up in dashikis and we all just like got our very best lives. And it was amazing. And that's how we should feel all the time. Mm. That's it. Like, no matter where you grew up, you should be able to look at the landscape of storytelling, even on Broadway. That's so much of what we're fighting for on Broadway is like, again, yes, we know that we have to sell to a very specific demographic, but also, like, you can keep this art form going by telling the stories of more people.
Right.
Do you mean, because like, trans people make money too,
right?
I mean, like, everyone makes money. So like, you actually can do that, and it's worth it to invest in that if you just want to look at like the financial of it, which is so shallow, but like, whatever. It's all possible. So, you know, I think that that's what's beautiful about where Marvel's at right now. And I think in the drama of it all, I think the only thing that is so silly about all of this, about Eternals not doing well, is I think that Marvel fans, and this is something I've just noticed, I'm not bashing comic book fans because I'm a huge comic book fan, but I think that we just as a culture get so used to like formula. Right. We just get so, you know, and I think that one of the things that the Marvel community is kind of slowly waking up to is like, hey, you know, when we say experiment, we mean experiment.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to try things. We're going to do things that are not just like, you know, the origin story or Tony Stark, you know, in a desert waking up with a, you know, Iron Man suit. We're going to try things. And I think that people, I'll make a dramatic statement, like, get with it.
Yeah.
Like I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. It's not like your regular, you know, hetero white boy saves the world story, but like, sorry.
Right.
You're right. I mean, like, there's more people than that. So like, get with it.
It was even like with the marketing for Eternals, obviously it was like pitched as an ensemble piece, but they made it seem that Richard Madden was the star.
I know. And that's what I'm saying. It's just like, he's not, in fact, he's like the opposite. You know, without giving too much away.
Yeah,
it's, you know, so I think that it's really sad that like yeah, this is really Gemma Chan's story. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't really put that forward. But I will say, you know, I think to Chloe Zhao's credit, I mean, she was really saying that in all her interviews, pushing Gemma Chan is like, yeah, she is my eyes in. And I think that that's what we got to do from now on. You know, I'm like, how can we just continue to push? Again, he's not pushing narratives on anybody, but like understanding that like everyone has a story to tell. So like, mm-hmm. just make space for people, man.
Yeah.
Let them tell their stories.
Absolutely.
Know? It'll all be so much better for it. So
beautifully said. Thank you.
Yeah. My dose of drama before we wrap up, it also is Marvel related.
Ooh, this is theme. This is
I know. Mm-hmm. Is we mentioned Hawkeye earlier, which of course stars Hailee Steinfeld.
Yes.
And my drama is, for years, I had heard on a podcast once that she on the set of Pitch Perfect 3 was advocating for Trump. Like, because they filmed it in a bubble in Atlanta during the 2016 election. For years was like, oh, I can't really support. Then I come to find out that was all a lie. She is not a Trump supporter. And
Nick's relief right now.
I know. And I feel so regretful that I spent 4 years or so, because mm-hmm. she is a great singer.
Yes.
And she has that great song.
Yes.
But I can't remember what it's called right now.
It's I Love Me.
She has a few. I think she has a few.
Yeah, she has a few. Yeah.
And I think that she's delivering on the assignment in this movie. She was nominated for an Oscar when she was like 16 or something like
14.
That. 14. 14 for True Grit, right?
True Grit.
Yeah. And she's giving, I think, a similarly grounded performance in Hawkeye, which I'm excited for you to see, Nick.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I think that people should get on board with her because she is really fun.
And she doesn't like Trump.
No.
And we love that. It's so sad. I think, but isn't that so sad that like we're at a point where, I mean, we've kind of always been at this point, but like we're very much like, if you liked a certain president, like, I'm not gonna fuck with you. Like, I'm just not, yeah, like, yeah. You mean like, yeah. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I just can't, because it literally, and again, you know, all love to everyone out there, but like, if you are standing by that person is like literally against like everyone's life on this podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
yep,
sorry.
That part.
So like, mm-hmm. yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't have time. I actually don't have time for it. So do your thing over there.
Yep.
Be mm-hmm. over there. But I'm so glad that she's not. And she's,
I know.
If you haven't seen True Grit and you haven't seen this child's performance in True Grit, It's just one of the best premiere performances you've ever seen in your life.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Out of control.
It's like ridiculous. She's so natural.
And handling like Coen Brothers dialogue, mm-hmm. which is like out of, you know, just ridiculous. And she does it like she was born to do it. Oh, and I'll say this. This is not drama, like in terms of drama, but in terms of a piece that I'm excited to see.
Yeah.
The Tragedy of Macbeth, Joel Coen's directing solo. With Denzel and Francis.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
So excited. It looks fantastic.
I'm hearing great things. And I'm a Shakespeare nut. So, you know, anything.
Oh my God. We didn't.
I know.
That's a whole. We
got to come back. You got to come back.
I will. If you invite me, I'll be there.
All right.
Nick, I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. You've been a true delight. And this next year for you, I hope all your dreams come true. Is that drama?
Thank you. No, that is not drama. That is just very kind. And I will take it. Thank you so much. And I wish the same for you guys. I wish it for you guys.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And good luck with 8 shows. Oh, you're going to be amazing. Use that little extra money for a Christmas bonus.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do that for sure.
Yeah. Maybe go to Disney or something. Now, where can the people find you?
So they can find me at Nikki Walks on both Twitter and Instagram. Little Justice Pod, which is my movie podcast. At Lil Justice Pod, and that's on my Instagram. And we're actually batching season 3 right now, so we're getting ready to get back on that train. And then at the Imperial Theater, come see Ain't Too Proud.
Yes.
Come see us do this madness.
Oh,
3-hour marathon. So that's where you can find me.
Very worth it.
Oh yeah.
Thank you so much, Nick. You are a superstar, and you are so nice. So thanks for sharing your talents with us, Connor. We got some work to do, so we're going to leave the people.
I know.
People should follow us at The Drama Podcast, me at Dylan McDowell, you at Connor McDowell, and Connor, I'll see you next time.
Drama.